Hello and welcome to the Green Tea Party,
where we discuss conservative solutions to environmental problems. I'm Hannah Rogers.
I am Zach Torpy, and together we will guide you through complex issues and provide strategies to address them,
all while remaining faithful to our conservative values.
Trust me, it'll be a good time.
Yeah, it's a party, so grab your mics and we're going to pour the tea. Zach, so I know this is crazy, but I just heard that Vladimir Putin won his election again. Did you hear about that?
I heard a peep or two about it.
Who would have guessed?
Only with 80% this time, so
he's losing support. How is he losing support? Like, who's in jail now? 12% of the population?
Well, he's usually winning with like 135%, so you know. It's
This is actually really interesting, though, because what does that mean for Putin's Russia? What does that mean? Like, are the Russian people becoming less satisfied with him as a leader? Like, what does this mean?
I mean, I think they are less satisfied, but I don't think they can show it through their electoral process. I saw videos of Russian soldiers checking in on people as they were voting, like pulling the curtain, like, are you voting for the right guy? No, it looks good to me. And just going down
really?
The line.
So they don't have any privacy when they vote, do they?
Why even bother? Why not just change the data that you put out after? It's already fake.
I mean,
everyone knows it.
We did a whole little bit of a series on legitimacy, and I've been thinking a lot about how important it is to authoritarian leaders to have at least a little bit of a buy-in from their people. Whether or not that buy-in is symbolic, it's still critical to their legitimacy, you know?
Yeah, yeah. They need enough of the population to be fully supportive of them to ensure that the other set of the population that's not happy is not rebelling or protesting too much.
You believe that everyone did vote for Putin of their own accord and there wasn't any intimidation, then you might feel like the odd man out and might not feel like you have support in expressing your discontent.
Yeah. And it's not like they had any other options. The main opposition guy, Alexei Navalny, murdered by Putin. I don't even know who their other candidates were.
Here's another thing, though. I feel like I just really got to know if he did a photo shoot. Like, I really got to know. Like, you know, celebratory, shirtless, bull riding photo shoot, because I'm just dying. That's the next thing I want to see, right?
Think Putin's shying away from that now. He's staying at his giant 40-foot long table that no one else can sit at.
I mean, I heard about this. This AP did a special on like the Russian oligarchy and how Vladimir Putin would purposely like drop his pen and like make a Russian oligarch pick it up at this 40-foot long table. And I'm like, this guy is like, he's petty, you know?
He thinks he's a king or czar again, and it's not great for the rest of Russia.
I mean, well, it's great for one guy, Putin, but probably not great for the rest of Russia, right?
Yeah.
Let's dive into the subject for today. So today we're talking about water, and I love talking about water because I feel like it's kind of the invisible crisis that is like perpetually going on and that everyone is just used to like, you know, turning the tap and there being water. But as I've been taking my classes, and I'm sure with you and your work, you slowly realize that like there's a lot of stuff that goes into like making sure there's water when you turn on the tap, you know?
Yeah, it's a big process. It's a lot of infrastructure. And it takes a lot of time to build out and maintain.
There's so many challenges, environmentally, infrastructure, engineering, because that's what you do, right, Zach? You're an engineer for a water company. Really cool job. You should tell the listeners a little bit more about like what problems you're trying to solve and like how that affects your understanding of water as a whole.
So I'm a project manager for a city municipality, and we work on developing projects and maintaining water service to the town, improving water service, allowing development to happen, like piping out to future areas where we're going to grow and continue to develop. It takes a lot to really make sure all this infrastructure is maintained properly, that water is getting where it needs to go. There's a whole other department that works on just acquiring the rights to this water and making sure our city has enough water to supply all its citizens for the future. It takes a lot of water to keep a city running, especially when it continues to grow and water's not grown anymore. It's a limited resource renewing resource, but it is a limited resource, especially in the Southwest, where me and Hannah currently live.
Yeah, and I feel like a lot of Californians might resonate with this, or a lot of people in the Midwest who might not have access to water resources outside of lakes or groundwater, or people who are affected by over-depletion of groundwater. You've probably seen this working as an engineer when people are over-depleting groundwater. Groundwater is critical because it affects the shape of the land, right? So if I'm building some infrastructure on top of the land and then I deplete the water resources beneath, you know, the land's going to sink in. It's going to have all these issues. And, you know, that's more something that people see in the Midwest. And I think each kind of part of the U.S. has its own specific geography, its own unique climate, and also because of that, its own unique water challenges, right?
The Northeast, or even towards the Mississippi, you have abundance of water, you have too much water, you deal with flooding, even though the Mississippi, I think, is dealing with some drought in the past couple of months. But in the Southwest, we're always fighting for more water and trying to use it more efficiently because it's such a limited resource here, and we only get so much water, so much rainfall, so much snowfall per year.
So I feel like addressing a community's ability, or a city, or, you know, an agency, their ability to successfully address these water concerns can really affect the rest of the community. Like, I'm thinking about Utah. Of course, we've talked about this on the show before, but there's a problem where we're running out of water because of the farming alfalfa in the desert. Alfalfa is a very water-intensive crop, and we're growing it in the desert, and we're dividing up the Colorado River such that it's going to be dry. We're going to be running out of water, right? And it's also drying up the Salt Lake, and it's drying up other resources. And so my community might not exist, because if the Great Salt Lake dries up, there's going to be this huge bed of arsenic and heavy metals that, you know, has been sinking below the lake bed for a while that's exposed to the atmosphere. And those heavy metals are going to get kicked up in the atmosphere and affect my community. Water policy is very important to whether or not I'm going to be able to live in Utah for the rest of my life. It's probably similar to someone who lives on the Mississippi. If they're experiencing so many floods and it's affecting their house, their housing price, like, you know, successful water management and balancing the interests of humans and the ecosystem are super critical. How have you seen this go awry in your life, Zach? Like, do you have any examples that come to mind for you?
Water just encompasses so much of everything we do. There is no community, there is no town, there is no city without water. If you don't have water to farm, you can't support a population, your population can't grow, and you can't develop anything. Like, water is essential for every part of our life. We do really overlook how important and valuable it is because of how easy the access is for the average American. If you look at different communities around the world where there is limited water access, it is a major constraint on the way they live and how they support their families. Yeah. Specifically in the Southwest, we have the Colorado River Compact, which regulates how much water each state gets. Who gets water is determined by the water rights, which can be very complicated. Colorado has more water lawyers than the rest of the country combined.
Wow, that's crazy. I didn't even know you could go into water law until a couple years ago, and it blew me away.
Yeah, it's a complicated and very contentious because everyone's fighting for water. When it's such a limited resource and it's been over-allocated in the Southwest, everyone's trying to get their hands on every little drop of water they can and fighting everyone else about it.
I think a lot about, you know, Utah's contention with just the city of Las Vegas. Where I live in Salt Lake, the water that precipitates here goes into the Colorado River and it goes to the Green River. And a lot of that is taken by Las Vegas. People in Salt Lake are looking at Las Vegas and being like, why do you have like the Bellagio fountain? Why do you have these massive swimming pools? Like, even though that might be a fraction of the water that the city of Las Vegas uses, and it uses water in other ways, it's still like we look at this huge oasis in the middle of the desert and we feel a little bit like the survival of our city is predicated on making sure that they're not overusing our resources. It kind of creates a lot of contention and animosity. And I remember I was at a meeting about water for one of the internships that I had. And it was an environmental internship with like a business community thing. And this farmer was talking to my supervisor and he said, I hope that you don't hate me because I'm growing crops in the desert, but I don't have any choice, you know? And it seems like this precedent of his family farm being there for, you know, hundreds of years, that it wasn't a problem until recently, right? And now he's having to deal with this. You know, our ancestors, Zach, you might resonate with this. They didn't have the information that we do today about water being a finite resource, about the water cycle, about how to manage water in a way that protects the interests of the environment of people now and people in the future. And so he's locked into being a farmer in the desert of Utah, and he doesn't really have a choice to change, you know? And so his interests are super important because we want to protect people like that. But it's also like him farming alfalfa in the desert is a bad thing, you know, for the rest of the community. How have you seen these contentions arise? Like, how have you seen these competing interests? How do people communicate with each other compassionately to like reach a solid conclusion, you know?
It's difficult to solve disputes between farmers and developing like municipalities and communities, because you need the farmers to continue to grow the food and to be able to support the communities that are growing. But the farmers proportionally use a large portion of the water from the Colorado River. 80% of water from the Colorado River goes to agriculture, with only 20% going towards municipalities. So it's a major chunk of where the water is being allocated. And we are growing food in the desert. Something like 3/4 of winter vegetables are grown in the Southwest in this arid desert. It's just very water intensive, but it's very necessary for us to maintain our food security in the U.S. So it's a big battle of priorities and how we manage this in the future. But I will say there have been many mistakes in how we have developed our water laws and how we've allocated water. And it wasn't like we found this out recently. They knew we made mistakes when they first did the Colorado River Compact. They looked back a couple of years, they're like, oh, we over-allocated the river to an amount that will never happen again. We basically took the wettest year in 100 years, divided that year up between the states, and we will never see that much water again. And now we're all fighting like we deserve this part of the pie that doesn't actually exist.
Yeah, that's definitely what's been going on. What you're saying to me is that we didn't even have an understanding of how the water system worked. We also didn't have an understanding of how the climate system worked. You know, studying climate science in college has taught me that water, of course, is a non-renewable resource, but it also changes year to year. And if only they had known that that year was an exceptionally wet year because of the climate conditions in that year, then maybe they would have taken an average of the years and then made allotments based on that, or made an allotment based on what a really, really dry year would look like. If that year that they had signed that compact had been a dry year,
we wouldn't be facing such a water shortage if they had allocated a more appropriate amount of water to the states.
Okay, so we were talking about water conservation, about these cities in the desert. What are some things that people can do to conserve water? No one person should feel like it's their own whole responsibility to like solve the water crisis, right? Because these are things that are outside of yours and my control, right? But, you know, I, as an environmentalist, like to do things that align with my values. And one of my values is water conservation. So, Zach, tell me in your expertise, because you have more expertise in this than I do, what are some things that people can do to conserve water?
The best thing you can do is go to your local government and find out what they advise and what they advise for your region. Like in my area, we have grants and tax credits to take out your grass lawn and replace it with a desert lawn that doesn't need watering and will be able to handle the hot weather that you face. Most of the water that an individual uses when they own a house is water for watering their lawn. Like that is the largest portion of our water usage in like a city community. That's the easiest first step, is just going from a grass lawn to a more desert friendly lawn using local plants and fauna that you can incorporate. This also helps your local ecosystem, because the local ecosystem is adapted to survive off those plants and not the grass, which is basically useless in most areas. Other stuff they can use is just trying to find ways that they can reduce their own water usage. If you have the money and you're building like a new house or something, putting in like a gray water system, I think, is really effective. That's a way of using wastewater from like your sink when you wash your hands. So it takes that soapy water and it'll recycle it to use in like a toilet as like a second use, because you don't need clean water for a toilet, and that will use the water a second time through your house. That can reduce your water usage by like 40% for
really?
A house. Yeah, a toilet's like the other way that we use most of our water, toilets and showers. And if you can reduce that a little bit, it helps a lot. Getting a dual flush or low flow toilet also helps. If you're getting new appliances, look for a WaterWise seal of approval. That's a more water efficient product that's been like approved by WaterWise, which I think is part of the EPA. I'll need to double check that.
Interesting. I also think globally, to talk about water problems, I always think about like hidden water, if that makes sense. For example, today I was in my hydrology class, which is why we're having this today, is because I take a hydrology class and it kind of scares me out of long showers. I don't know if your conversations at work affect you like that, but I'm like, oh my gosh, maybe I'll shower every other day, or maybe I'll just shower for like 5 minutes a day. And all that I was thinking about, I was like, what do I even do in the shower? I just like put around and like stand in warm water forever. I'm like, I could save so much of my own time by taking less shorter showers. It's just like, you get in the warm water and you're like, I just never want to leave, you know? So that's totally a sidetrack. But I feel like for myself, I've been doing this thing where I thought, okay, I eat a vegan diet. I don't eat meat. Meat is really water intensive. Like, a burger has like 1,800 liters of water behind it, which is crazy. Wow,
that sucks.
But then I'm like, okay, that's so I don't really terrible. Need to like, you know, watch how much water I'm using at home. And I have this like garden, and I've been kind of irrigating the garden instead of like, you know, using sprinklers or something like that. That's more water wise. And I'd also been taking long showers. I wasn't using water wise products, all that kind of stuff. Now that I know how much my own water consumption is really in my own control, I've been really kind of dedicated to being like, okay, I'm going to be the most water wise person. But then my basement flooded. So and it flooded with toilet water, which was horrible. It was so bad. It was disgusting.
Yeah, degrading. Yeah, so I feel like my water pipes consumption can cause leaks
has kind
and
of been
burst.
Completely offset.
By imagine that happening like, on a like my, 18 my or 46 inch
like
pipe
4 inches of
slowly
water.
Leaking water, and then one it day it just bursts and all the water that goes to
lot.
Waste just
I mean,
from that.
Luckily right now it doesn't. I was able to pump most of it out, but it was pretty stressful this last few weeks trying to salvage my things. That's another huge part of it that I
yes,
hadn't even
so
thought about.
One of the projects
you know,
I'm working on right now is
the infrastructure in your house,
pipe
as you were saying, like
replacement
checking
project.
For leaks, making
a city
sure
should be replacing
that you know your
1-3%
not going to overflow
every year because they
and
have
then all
a
of a sudden 100-year
lifespan on average.
I have to tell you, my toilet was not clogged.
If you're not
there was a leak
those,
in the pipe that went
every like 70 to 100 years, you're going to run into some pipe bursts and it's going to really damage your system. It causes huge infrastructure issues, can cause huge damages in the city, and if it's at a high pressure line, it can go wrong catastrophically.
Yeah.
I've seen pictures of water spraying out like 300 feet in
the
air.
That's what you do with the city, right? Is you help check for leaks, update the infrastructure, make sure that like in the transmission of water, you're not losing anything.
Yeah, they're designed to be pressurized, get water where it needs to go. And that needs a lot of pressure and needs a lot of water. So you're pumping out hundreds and thousands of gallons very quickly if you burst a pipe.
Oh my gosh. When I was at elementary school, this is another sidetrack, but there was a farm across the street where I grew up because I grew up in a farming community. They were growing beets or potatoes. I can't remember. I wouldn't be surprised if it was potatoes. Potatoes and beets are like the only thing Utah grew. The pipe burst and it flooded my elementary school while I was at school. And it burst like 10 minutes before it flooded my elementary school. Like, it was crazy how much water can just rush through those pipes. But it makes sense because that's what they're designed to do, right, Zach? Yeah. But I guess this is all to say that, like, if you're like me and you really care about water conservation, because we kind of talked about why it's so important, Zach and I were mentioning it's a non-renewable resource. You know, there's all these hidden fights around it that not very many people pay much attention to. And it really affects the future of our cities.
Because without water, what are we supposed to do? It does come back to the water cycle.
We all have to drink water. We all have to use water.
But it is a resource that you want to contribute to water conservation. California, the past couple months,
it's hard to see those kinds of waves. That kind of water waste, so much of it's just been lost to the ocean because they don't have ways to store it. But then I sit back and think, okay, that wasn't to my control. It's important that we maintain water when it falls. It's okay that that happens.
Use the water that
I shouldn't feel guilty about it. I shouldn't feel shame about it. I'm doing the best that I can. But to know that those things are going to happen, and water will get wasted if we all collectively do our best, then probably when those accidents happen, where water gets wasted, it won't affect our water nearly as much as it does if people are not careful.
More deserty communities in the developing world are handling water and trying to develop their communities. They're focusing on how to recharge the water that they've been pumping out for years. So in the Sahel, they're working on building different types of bunds and shallow ditches in the ground to slow the washing away of water. So it'll slow how fast it flows and reduce the water that is like washing away the topsoil, and it'll trap that water in the land. And as that water sits there, it will slowly regenerate into the groundwater. And that increases moisture in the soil, allows plants to start growing. And in a desert community where you're not getting a lot of rain, you're just getting like, sometimes you'll get like a downpour one day and then nothing for another 4 months. And it's important to recharge those aquifers when the water is there. So it's important to slow it down, capture it, and be able to have the water stored in underground where you can use it in the future. You're breaking up a little bit, Hannah. Can you hear me, Hannah?
Hannah.
You know what's crazy? It's illegal to do that in Utah. In Utah, if you want to do that. Yeah, so in Utah, if you want to store your own rainwater off of your own roof, they don't allow you to do that, which I think is absurd, because if it fell off my own roof, why can't I use it? You know, why can't I store it? You could get a fine for collecting that water. Luckily, it's not very intensely enforced, but they kind of have this grandfather clause where people have water rights that exist before your home may have been there, before any of those things may have been there. But that person who has that water right might not be collecting that water, but they technically, legally, by the code of Utah, can sue you for the water that you collected off of your own house. Which, I don't know, Zach, do you think that's absurd?
I think a lot of the laws and rights and restrictions around water is pretty ridiculous. A lot of it feels like the federal and state governments messed up 100 years ago. We were like, oh, we're just going to continue following these laws and rules that we set in place that we now know are not working out. We're going to punish anyone who tries to work around them.
Yeah, which just feels crazy to me. It's like
doubling down on a mistake.
You probably should be able to collect your own water because it fell on your own property. But where I live, they don't like that. And I feel like I've tried to talk to people about it, but I feel like the problem with water policy is you're either really into water policy and water law or you're not. There's not very many in-between people. And so it's hard to build political will to change water laws.
I wonder if it would also be against the law to make a retention or detention pond, like a small one in your like yard and retain water that way.
I wonder as well. I mean, there are people who have ponds at my house, in my neighborhood growing up and stuff like that. My parents capture their own water. So I think it's kind of like, since it's not intensely enforced, it's like, well, you know, no one really cares, but It's also like people aren't aware that they're breaking the law, probably, you know? But ultimately, I think that part of a conservative value that I have is being self-sufficient. And I feel like being able to collect your own water is a part of that. Being able to decide what happens with that water is a part of that. But our legal system around water doesn't, you know, protect the interests of individuals very much. It mostly just protects the interests of governments and municipalities, which is frustrating. But I definitely think if we do care about water conservation and we do care about people using water responsibly, if people have more experience collecting and managing their own water, they might see it as a resource that needs to be managed more so.
The problem with the managing water on like the scale that we need to do for the states is it makes it so hard to make gains on a small and local level, whereas you need to like really develop infrastructure and put that infrastructure in and have a long-term plan. And it feels like the infighting between the different states has stopped any progress towards saving and conserving the water and having a more realistic allocation determined.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like a lot of things around water are unrealistic and also like a bit too optimistic about, you know, the future of water, especially as it comes to climate change, because we've talked about this before, but climate change really threatens water availability. You know, like water might be evaporating too fast. Water, like snowpacks might be melting quicker. All of those things. It changes our existing systems that are already so vulnerable. And I think, you know, if people are able to have more of a stake in what happens to the water, more of a say in what happens to the water, and are more educated and have information on where their water is coming from and how their water system operates, I feel like we will more likely be able to come up with solutions that are mutualistically beneficial, you know?
I'm of the belief that the solutions are out there. We just do not want to implement them because it is difficult to change the way we do things. And our political infrastructure is such that it benefits those who are already in power or those who like have the water rights. And it's hard to change or improve efficiency on the margins and recoup that value. Like in Israel, they are super efficient with their water, where they've become a water exporting country in one of the driest deserts in the world.
Really?
Yeah, because they do all their watering through drip irrigation and have desalination plants, and they're just very efficient on how they use the water to make sure none of it goes to waste. And they've had a major campaign to push people to use less water and think about where they're getting their water from. So people are hyper aware of their water and put an emphasis on maintaining it and not wasting it, which is something I feel like we don't have here, because in much of the Southwest, if you stop using the water that you are allocated, you lose the rights to that water after a certain time period.
Which is just such an absurd model. Use it or lose it just encourages people to use it, and then ultimately everyone loses.
Yeah, it discourages efficiency and productivity and is, I think, a major issue and a reason why we have not figured out a better way to manage our water in the Southwest.
It's very sad. Okay, so as we're talking about water, low-key, have you seen the movie Dark Waters? Okay, well, that would be the homework for our listeners, is to watch the movie Dark Waters, because I feel like that was a life-changing movie for me. It didn't talk as much about water conservation, but it did really show how integral safe, accessible water is for communities to thrive. Because this community's water was poisoned by the DuPont Chemical Company, and they are still experiencing the consequences of that. And I feel like if you want to learn more about how critical water is as a resource, watching this movie, there's even a book called Dark Waters, will teach you a lot about and the experience of not having safe, accessible water.
Actually, I've seen Dark Water and I love it.
Has Mark Ruffalo in it.
Yeah, great, great movie.
It is so good. And it's based on a true story. So everyone should watch it. Yeah, do you have any more closing thoughts?
Yeah, if you want to take action, go to your local government and see what their water department suggests for conserving water in your area and see if they have any programs. My community does reimbursement for efficient toilets, efficient sprinklers, reimburses you for removing your lawn and replacing it with like desert fauna. So there are programs out there, and your local community is probably trying to find ways to save water. So they will support you in any way you want to save water.
That's awesome. I really feel like I should get my landlord involved in that, because we have a big, huge lawn, and I'm like, oh man, we just look so good with some pebbles. For you, our listener, please email us with your thoughts. Our email is info@greenteapartyradio.com. And we also really like hearing from you. It makes me happy. It makes me feel like you guys are jamming out to our thoughts and our feelings. It's awesome. And again, thank you so much for listening and being a part of this. And a very special thank you to all of the Patreons as well, because we really could not do any of this without you.
And if you're interested in getting early access to episodes as well as Green Tea Party Radio merch, check us out at greenteapartyradio.com. If you have feedback, tell us what's on your mind at Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, whoever owns that in the future.
Yeah, because they're selling TikTok, aren't they?
And just to know, this is our passion project. We don't have any organizational sponsors. Just a reminder that Green Tea Party Radio is not representative of the Diocese of Little Rock, Catholic Climate Covenant, or any of our employers. We are building a movement because we want the world to know that conservatives have important things to say about climate change. And we want to be a part of the discussion, part of the solution.
And if you want to hear us on your college radio station, email us at info@greenteapartyradio.com and give us the details about your campus and your radio station. That email again is info@greenteapartyradio.com. Okay, Zach, you're the best. Always enjoy talking to you on every Monday night.
Yeah, thanks,
I'll
Anna.
See you next Good Monday.
Yeah.
Yes.